trust. It's the people in charge we're not sure about.
All right, welcome everybody to episode 42 of the In Tech We Trust podcast. I don't know if I'm right on this. I reckon that most folks that are into technology, right, probably know that the number 42 is a bit special. So just throwing it out to everybody on the podcast here. Do you guys all know why 42 is a special number?
Absolutely.
Go on then, Rick.
Jackie Robinson, first professional athlete in Major League Sports of African-American descent.
That's not what I was thinking of, but very good.
Is it how old you are?
Are you cheeky or what? I'm mid-30s.
Does it have anything to do that if you multiply it by 10, it's 420?
Oh, no, but we have gone down that road before, haven't we?
We have.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you all know. You know what? Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, apparently 42 is the number or the answer to everything, right? And as if we didn't already have the answer to every tech question possible in the world with our usual cast and crew, we do have a special guest this week, Chris Wall.
Hey!
Hello!
How are you, Chris?
Doing fantastic. I thought the answer to life, the universe, and everything was containers, Nigel.
Oh, you're dead right,
oh,
actually.
Oh, you missed out.
It's very good, yeah. So, actually, we'll get on to talk to you about what's going on with you at the moment, Chris, but I am very, very conscious this week that every single person on the call, except me, works for us. Well, yeah, would you call yourself a storage vendor now that you're at Rubrik? They're a storage vendor, right?
Well, technically this week I'm unemployed, so I don't work for anyone.
Oh, when do you start?
Hey!
That's next week. So probably by the time people listen to this, I'll be at Rubrik.
But you did the video, you know? All in.
Saw the video.
Yeah, it's, nice. it's not secret.
Dude, everyone's going to be downloading and listening to this on the 4th of July. They're going to be celebrating independence listening to you on this show.
Rock on. Stay safe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't play with fireworks.
So I'm surrounded by four evangelistas. Hey, Mark, how's the new job going for you? Because I did see that you busted out a new Steering Wheel Camera Society of America video this week.
Two exciting things. Yeah, we brought back the Steering Wheel Camera Society of America. That was a lot of fun. And also, we introduced the Tej Ale of the Month.
Oh?
And so we're going to be doing, we're doing driving and beer, but not at the same time.
That's a good combination.
Not at the same time. And, it can't be much better than that. So it's going great.
Cool. Is it what you'd hoped it would be over at Tej Isle?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Lots of fun. You know, it's always like that until the end.
Yeah.
Now we just have to speculate on who's going to buy Tej Isle now that Mark is there, since
it's
everywhere
true,
he
actually,
goes.
Yeah.
I'm going for a beer company. You know, I've been acquired by storage companies. I want to be acquired by a beer company now. So, you know, doing a Tej Isle beer of the month, you know, I'm hoping to get in front of a few beer guys and, pitch ourselves.
Cool.
By the way, the beer that we found was pretty good. I just want to talk about it a little bit. If any of you are ever here up in Fremont, there's a little brewery, a little fledgling craft brewery called JP Das Brew. And if you go to my blog, the Data on Top blog, I set up a menu for it, the Tej Ale of the Month. And so there is one now for June 2015. And this is a tiny little brewery. It's in a industrial park. You know, so they roll open a garage door and there's the tasting room. And they do a lot of German stuff, right? They get a lot of German malts and German yeast and all that. And we had a Kolsch. It's called the Buxom Blonde Kolsch. It was quite good. And it opens every day at 4:30. And so if you're out here ever visiting, you know, or, you know, coming to the home company, you know, Chris, that could be you, although it's across the bay from where you'll be coming out to. Terrific beer, fledgling little brewery, kind of fun place to hang out.
Is it 4:30 a.m.?
No. No, it's open from 4:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. On a daily basis. And, it's just, you know, I'm a small brew, craft brew guy, and I just thought I'd give them a shout out. They were really nice to us, and it's fun.
Can I do a beer shout out while we're talking on that?
Oh, yeah. Come on.
I've got a really cool one, and this is, believe it or not, friends, is an exclusive to Ohio right now. They're on the go. But, you know, I'm almost out of beer at home. Have you ever been there? Especially once you start drinking. Yeah, I know. The tragedy, right? Drinkos, a new mobile app, web service. It's Uber of beer. You literally on your phone say, bring me 2 6-packs of Sierra Nevada and 2 6-packs of Line and Kugel's Summer Shandy. And within 1 hour, it's delivered to you. They check your ID and all. But it is beer, alcohol, wine, liquor, cigars, munchies, the delivery service.
It sounds like they should have called it Hobo to Go.
Drinkos.com. Friends, I can't wait to run out of beer because I really want to try this. I think that's kind of cool.
So is it just a guy that rocks up and checks your ID and delivers you beer and stuff? Or is it like drones and stuff like that drop it for you?
Awesome.
Yeah, that's the next wave, right?
It's not drones, but... See, Drinkos doesn't have an inventory. It's like Airbnb. It's like Uber. They don't have any cars. They don't have any. They just manage SKUs, and they find local retailers, wholesalers, maybe distributors. And those parties are committing to 60-minute delivery within a metro area. Or maybe, you know, if a big city, you know, one on the left, one on the right, one on the top, one on the bottom. And they bid out these jobs, and they're picked up, and they're delivered. The markup is not bad either. I mean – 50 cents more on a 6-pack of beer that I like. That I thought was very fair.
How can they even stay in business?
There is a delivery fee, but I've not done it yet. But I'm telling you, if you're in the moment, you know, this might be just the thing. And I can't wait to use it. Like I said, it's going to be a good thing to be out of beer soon. But they don't own the inventory. They're just brokering out agencies to get it done. I think it's brilliant. I can't wait to try it.
You know what? We absolutely live in the innovation age these days, don't we? I mean, you know, we've gone through Stone Age, the Bronze Age, the Information Age, all of that. We're in the innovation age because there's just like cool stuff like that. Just anybody has a cool idea these days. There's just like nothing stopping you doing it, right? I mean, you know that thing there about having drones deliver it? How cool would it be that you're out the back with your buddies having a barbecue and stuff and it's like... Hey, we're out of burgers or we're out of beer or whatever. No worries. Bit of an app on my phone. Drones deliver it. Oh, you'd be the man, wouldn't you? I mean,
telling you, this and you get a good GPS signal. The technology's possible in our lifetimes, friends. You know, we're going to be all kinds of able to be all kinds of lazy, and I can't wait.
That really tops sitting at a sushi bar and waiting for the train to go by. You know, or the boat.
That's an old school drone, man. Move on.
Yeah, yeah, man. Drone. I mean, I wonder if you could get like kegs delivered, if you could like somehow get like 10 drones to fly together and deliver like a small pony keg.
Well, maybe. Once they have self-driving cars, I mean, that's the next one, right? So, and then I have an automatic unloading vehicle. That technology's there already. So,
a self-driving car and you're sitting in the passenger seat, can you be drinking if you're in a passenger seat in a self-driving car?
I believe not, because I remember Google's prototype self-driving car. Actually, they was rejected by California DOT because there's no manual override for the driver. So it has to be able to switch on to traditional driving mode. So I doubt it.
Okay.
Yeah, wouldn't that break an open container law too in a lot of states?
Well, you need a self-driving RV. Then the rules are blurred.
Or like an old 70s van.
Open. That's a good point, Chris. I mean, you'd have open container, but say you know it was being driven by the machine and not by a human. I guess if you have to have overdrive, well, then that takes care of it.
What's open container? Sorry, guys.
Like me, drinking a beer in the car.
Oh, okay.
But I'm not driving. It's just a peripheral safety, basically.
I'm with you. Yeah.
Is that not a concept in the UK?
We don't call it open container. No.
Well, he doesn't even drink. He barely knows
what
we're talking about.
They call it a Thursday.
So it would be right, drink driving, right?
Well, your passenger would be drinking and being driven. That's what it would be. That is illegal in the States.
What? It's illegal in the States to be a passenger in a car and be consuming an alcoholic beverage?
In most
Correct.
States.
In most states. I think it's got to be illegal in all states, but.
It's a good
Except
idea.
Texas, I think.
Except Texas
still has some of the open container rules.
We're drinking a cold 45 with our shotgun out. So
right, where they still have drive-in liquor stores, right, in Texas?
Well, they do have the drive-through liquor stores.
Drive-through liquor stores,
yeah. But you can't just pop open the cold 45 right. And slam it, you know, in the passenger seat.
They have those in Ohio, too, like I call them pony kegs.
Hey, you know what? I might be wrong, but I don't think that's illegal over here. But when you were talking
I'm moving. I'm in. I'll be there next year.
When you were talking about the open container law, this is pretty sad. I thought you were talking about something to do with like Docker or CoreOS Rocket or something like that.
No, there are old school containers and new school containers. We were talking old school.
There are indeed. Yeah.
They're both fun.
Anyway, Gabriel, you've not said a great deal. What are you up to, buddy?
I'm booking travel. No, I've just been hanging out. I've been really, really busy. If you've noticed, I haven't been on a couple podcasts recently, primarily because I've been really focused on some scoping options for these agile infrastructure offerings that we deliver, as well as writing blog posts and just getting us all fired up.
Is it like the total opposite to when you were at Cisco and you didn't have a product and you had nothing to do?
Exactly. Now I have more to do than I can possibly fit in the day. But, you know, that's the best part about it is I'm really busy. I'm doing a lot of different things. You know, I'm not day-to-day sales anymore, which is different. Now I'm on more of the sausage-making side, and it's a really interesting career transition to move into that particular aspect. Where you're helping shape strategy and product and vision and all of the cool stuff that I'm used to getting handed down to me.
Sausage making side. So, Gabriel, you're in the storage charcuterie business now.
Exactly. I'm glad you said that because I can never say that word to save my life.
I'm a foodie. That's easy for me.
It's got too many syllables. I don't know which to emphasize.
Has it been a good move for you, though, Gabe? You're loving it, yeah?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I work with a really great team of people. It is really different in terms of, you know, it's not coming in at the very, very beginning of the startup and, you know, wearing 72 hats. It's coming in as the company is starting to mature and ramp and get to that inflection point where, you know, you still wear a lot of hats, but, you know, it's not so, you know, I would liken it to like when I was at Simplivity, you came on board and it was like, all right, it's a sprint, but you're actually running a marathon. So you're trying to sprint a marathon. It just is not capable. You can't do that for too long. I'm not flying every, you know, I'm not doing 10 flights in a week the way I used to. Now it's more like I'm going someplace for a few days at a time. And, but my travel schedule isn't as hectic and crazy, but I have a lot more content and I'm responsible for a lot more, deliverable aspects. So, you know, I'm still involved with sales. I'm still involved with, you know, getting in front of customers and doing all that part of it. But, you know, I'm not tied to a specific number anymore, which is kind of a, you know, a new thing for me.
Sounds great. It sounds great. You can go out on calls now, and if there's something you don't like about the materials, you can blame yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. Now I have no one to blame but myself for the poor content that is delivered.
Cool. Hey, before we start talking to Chris, I just want to drag the conversation sideways a little bit. I finished reading another book this week.
Oh, you don't read them. You say you read, but you don't mean it.
Yeah, I know. Reading's old school, right? Who the hell reads these days, right? I'd rather have somebody read it to me. Audible.com, love it.
You know, we should hire you. We should hire you to read our data sheets then, so no one has to read them.
Wouldn't be good. No. Yeah. So I like shouted out to people on Twitter sphere saying, look, I just finished another book. It was called Lexicon. Awesome book. If anybody's into kind of sci-fi books and wants to know one to read, Lexicon, I can highly recommend it. But I just thought I'd shout out to people, the kind of people that follow me, techie people, all that kind of stuff, see what recommendations I got in. So I just want to ask the four of you, right? Are all of you into sci-fi and sci-fi books and sci-fi TV programs and sci-fi films?
Yes.
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 So is that like some kind of rule that to be into technology, you've got to have had a sci-fi background and a sci-fi interest? I mean, don't get me, I'm not being stupid here. I know it's not, but the vast majority of people that work in our industry and are passionate about it, right, are into that kind of stuff, yeah?
Yes.
Duh. Yeah.
That's so cool, isn't it? So, yeah.
We're wondering, like, what's wrong with you, Nigel, that you're even posing the questions.
No, I know, yeah.
Well, you know, if we had it our way, Nigel, an employment screening process wouldn't be an interview. It wouldn't be an application. It would be Star Wars trivia.
Oh,
Star Trek Lexicon. You know, that's how it should go.
I'll tell you what, that is like some innovative idea there. I can see some startup that takes that on as a policy and they go on to rule the world, because that's just like, that is such common sense there. You are going to get the right people.
Oh, man.
Or are you going to get people who spend all their time reading sci-fi stuff and not doing any work?
So, you know what? That is the problem. So the next book that I got, and Chris, I don't know if it was one that you recommended. Actually, maybe it was. It was The Way of Kings, Stormlight.
Yeah, Stormlight Archive by Brandon Sanderson.
Yeah. So, of course, because I don't read them, I don't know how many pages it is, but the Audible version is 48 hours long. And I looked at that and I'm like, you know what? I've got a deliverable on a new course for Plural Sight. And if I start that book, that is going to push my course out like at least a week. And I don't know if I can afford that at the moment. So that's a good call. Whoever said it earlier, maybe it was you, Rick, that, yeah, either you get great people or you get people that just want to read and watch sci-fi all day and do no work for you. Because I could easily fall into that trap. Some of this stuff is gripping stuff.
It's the best, right? I usually don't read that much, but when I get into something, it's all consuming.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? Bizarre. Hey, one last question on this topic, and this is a really geeky question, all right. Do you wish you were born in the future? No, but
no,
seriously.
I could be your own child?
No, that's weird.
Is it a dystopian future?
Yeah, I'm just thinking, you know. All of this, like, space flight and time travel and genetic engineering, all this kind of stuff. It's like, oh, man, I am, like, living in the dark ages here, and I'm just, oh, I love to live in those kind of days. Anyway,
I wish I was in the past. I feel like I could be, you know, top dog of the era the farther back I go.
Really? How come?
Well, I don't know. I just feel like I have a better understanding of history than I do the future, first of all. Right, it's more documented for one. Secondly, that's kind of obviously profound, but never spoken. But secondly, first of all, I like older music, like 70s. I wish I was born in the 40s. That's what 1940s. That's what I wish I was born in. It's the golden era, man. I'd be one of those old Ronald Reagan Californians. But I would have been a Democrat, but that's okay. You know, I would have been out there living the life, you know, in that early era back. I think that was born in the '40s in California. That's where I wish I was born.
Working like the madman office, martinis at two. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could see being in the future. I think I would like ratchet forward 50 years and say, let's start this over again.
Yeah. Do you know what as well? Like, I'm sure as long as we don't wipe ourselves out, with a nuclear bomb or something like that, we're going to get to the point, right? Science is going to advance and technology and all that stuff to the point where we don't die, whether that be physically, whether we upload our brains to something that's not a biological body or whatever, right? Would you want to live forever?
I think I'd get bored.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, there's been a lot of science fiction about that kind of
exactly,
stuff.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, so the answer to that is no. I've read too many, you know, books on that. I don't think I want to live forever. But I think you know, the way society changes and whatnot, the way technology affects society, I think would be very interesting to move forward 50 years, you know, and just see how different it is. And, you know, probably it's going to be a case where just about anything goes because you can connect in ways that, you know, we are unfathomable to us today.
Pretty exciting, yeah.
It would be nice to be able to teleport.
Oh, wouldn't it? Yeah. Then you wouldn't have to do all those flights, yeah.
I would sacrifice the miles for teleportation tomorrow.
Okay, well, let's shift on a bit anyway. So before we get into the tech news and the biz news like we normally do, because you're our guest, Chris, we thought we'd put you up front. So why don't you tell the listeners who you are? I'm sure most of them know who you are. You're a bit of a legend. What you're doing at the moment. Tell us about, you know, what made you move over to Rubrik. I know you're not there yet, but what enticed you over there? So go on, Chris.
Yeah, I'm busy vMotioning. I'm not quite at the destination yet. Yeah. Well, first off, thanks for inviting me on your podcast. I am at Chris Wall on the Twitter. I've written almost 500 articles on wallnetwork.com at this point, very tech focused. And I co-host the Data Knots podcast with Ethan Banks. And hopefully you've picked up a copy of my book called Networking for VMware Administrators. All the royalties are going to charities, specifically the Alzheimer's Association. So that's kind of me in four lines.
Oh, man, round of applause for that. I'm sorry. That's fabulous. That's great. Yeah. No, very good.
Yeah, I'm not worthy.
No.
Oh.
Me neither.
Yeah.
But you are a candidate.
Fair enough.
So yep. Actually, Chris, go on. Tell us about your podcast. So Datanauts podcast, you've done 2 episodes so far. I'm curious because we're like 42 episodes in now, and it seems to be going all right, but it's a lot of hard work. There's 4 of us now. There used to be 5 of us, and that certainly helps, right? But right now there's you and there's Ethan, and then it looks like you're sorting out different guests for each show. So what was it that drove you to go for a new podcast?
Actually, we've been looking to do a podcast together for just about a year. We had one that we started that we never got off the ground called IT Engine Builders. And the premise has always been that we wanted to break silos together. Ethan's a very networking focused guy. Mm-hmm. He has a lot of skills there. I've been in the server virtualization world for a long time. We thought, hey, let's kind of throw stuff over the wall at each other and see what happens. So within the last couple months, we finally took the time. Ethan left his job. He is now full time at Packet Pushers with Greg Farrow. Mm-hmm. And they recently got Drew Connery Murray from Interop. So they've got the 3 amigos there. And he's built the time into his schedule to do this. I have the time, you know, here and there to do it. The idea is to talk around kind of data center topics. It's the data center astronauts scrunched down into the word data knots. That's where it came from. And the idea is just every other week or so, talk around something in the data center and pick apart silos, technology, and interview people who are quite amazing. I think we got Mark coming on here soon to talk storage. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. Yeah.
Mark Farley, no way. Very good.
A lot of bribes, beer. We actually bribed him with Pabst.
I get to drink. You didn't tell me I get to drink beer on the podcast.
We're hoping you do.
Woot! Oh, yeah!
So yeah, that's been great. We got 2 shows in. We actually have 2 or 3 more that are still in editing. And the idea is just every other week to put out some highly edited, you know, kind of quality content around data center stuff and see where it goes.
Cool. So is this the first podcast that you've hosted then?
I've been a co-host on the Virtualization User Podcast as a Service, a.k.a. VOPAS. And that was me and Guru Simran and Josh Atwell. I think we did that for about a year. And then we all just kind of got busy and it kind of fell to the wayside. So maybe we'll rekindle that. I'm not sure.
Now, I did listen to your first episode and a little bit to your second episode. So I know you've got some intro music now as per your second episode. The first episode, though, I must have been out of the room during part of it, because when you came to wrap the podcast up, you were talking about Klingon and talking Klingon on the podcast. Did somebody actually talk Klingon on the podcast?
Yeah, we had Scott D. Lowe, you know, other Lowe on Twitter on, and he is an amazing guest. I just threw out an example, like, you know, that sysadmins today are being asked to know so many different things. And it's the day of the specialist is kind of dying. The day of the data center engineer is kind of rising. And you need to know how to speak Klingon and do backflips and things like that. And he ran with that example. And finally, at the end of it, he said kapla, you know, which is I think it's like a you did well or congratulations or something. So I don't really know Klingon, but apparently he does. So that's how fantastic the podcast is.
Because, like, isn't it an official language or something like that?
There's definitely a Klingon Wikipedia, because I learned how to spell it by looking it up. Good so
I think it's actually, there's a Klingon Bible.
Oh, my goodness.
Bible has been translated into Klingon, I believe.
Nigel, you and I might have flunked the interview.
What's that?
You and I might have flunked the interview.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah. Good grief. So you were talking about, you know, IT guys these days being asked to speak Klingon and do backflips. Scott did the Klingon. Did you do the backflips then?
Yeah, behind the scenes, I was definitely doing lots of. I'm very agile when you can't see me. It's only when I'm in public that I can't do those things.
Is that right? Yeah.
That's like reverse Superman. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. We were hoping we could see him on Periscope.
Hey, there you go.
Depends on what's at stake. So, you know, what are you offering?
All the lint in my pocket.
Well, actually, speaking of what are you offering, that was one question I had is, what did it take to make Chris Wall make this move?
Oh,
you're
sure.
Talking about the rubric, not the podcast, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sure I have the best answer yet because I haven't quite started yet. But the kind of the background there was I've been doing enterprise consulting for pretty close to 4 years. And before that, I've been doing work on the customer side, you know, as an end user for 13 or 14 years. So, I mean, the most probably superficial and least, you know, important reason on my list, I've never worked for a vendor, especially not a startup. So it was on my list of things that I wanted to explore. And
how many people are at the company, Chris?
Mid-40s. I think I'm mid-40 employee, yeah.
You get a respectable badge number then, that's cool.
Double digit, yeah. And, you know, Duncan Epping actually pointed it out to me. He reached out and said, hey, there's this cool thing going on. You know, you should take a deeper look, and made introductions. And it just sounded like a really neat idea to kind of change the way the data protection was done. And I was pretty honest. I said, I've never done an evangelist role. I've never worked at a vendor, especially not a startup. This is all kind of new stuff to me. It would be a lot of learning that I'd have to do, but I'm up to the challenge. And quite frankly, I work off my gut. And my gut was like a little scared at the opportunity. Like, this isn't comfort zone level. And that's typically where my compass points, is wherever my gut is telling me this is a little scary. This is something new. I'm not sure about success, you know, from my personal skill set perspective. So I just drove right at that because it was something that I did. I have not perfected yet. And that was kind of my compass on that one.
Nice. Who do you report to? And like, are you on your own in that kind of evangelist role there? Because if you are, I'm thinking, and it's your first role, it's like, whoa, that is some learning curve and, so, you know, so, some exciting stuff to go at.
Yeah, I report to the CEO, officially the technical evangelist. And I don't know, I thought that I could pull from doing 5 or so years of running my own company, which is Wall Network, and going around and speaking and presenting. And I'm sure there's vast differences. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to be cocky on that. But it did seem like this other thing that I heard Anil say on the Geek Whispers was that, you know, if you're sitting across the bench from someone that's kind of adjacent to you, being that I was always in this kind of hybrid pre-sales consulting role and thought that marketing could do better and the evangelists that I worked with could do better. And there was things, ideas that I had that I wanted to improve upon. Anil just said, you know, cross over to that kind of 1 degree of separation, try it yourself. And so I'm taking him up on that kind of challenge and saying, I'm going to see what I can do in that space to improve upon kind of the state of the art.
It's definitely a different transition. You know, I think, I think a lot of us started out, who have transitioned to vendor side, who were actually end users ourselves for a number of years. We have a lot of preconceived notions going in on what those roles look like or what they should feel like and what kind of work you should actually be doing. And then day one starts and then everything completely goes out the window because it's so much different. There's so much more things that you don't know or don't realize. It is really a full on career transition. It's not just changing jobs. It's changing careers entirely. I think that's the one thing I wasn't quite prepared for when I did make the jump myself, to how drastically different it was going to be.
So where did you make your transition to, Gabriel?
I still haven't made it.
No.
No, you know, yeah, I'll tell you.
Episode 43 is what you want to be when you grow up. We're working on that one next week.
I'll tell you right now. I mean, I think my career path has transitioned, and I'm still moving towards kind of, you know, my ultimate goal. You know, I think there's several of us. I've had this discussion with people I work with and, you know, my peers, and there's this kind of, you know, there's those kind of, I think some of the coolest roles out there are like the field CTO type of a role, right? And I think for me myself, I wanted to getting into sales was something I purposely chose to do, but getting onto the more of the technical marketing and product management and biz dev side of business was something I chanced into and I really enjoy. So far, you know, in the role that I've been doing with SolidFire. And I think those, having worked in the trenches and then now seeing kind of how the sausage is made and how relationships are built, you know, how you work with partners in the channel and some of these other things, that is all great experience to kind of get me to this next phase. I still don't know what that phase looks like, so we'll see. But, you know, ultimately, I think some of us, I mean, we've all had this discussion before. I think a lot of us have ideas. We would love to be able to start our own companies or at least be part of that team of, you know, the first 5 founders. I think ultimately that would probably be one of my end games.
That's interesting, Gabriel. So to be like one of the first 5 founders, though, what kind of skill set do you need? Don't you need to be like a coder or, you know, a hardcore engineer or something? No.
You got to be a sales whiz. You got to be a marketing whiz. You got to be that hardcore technology whiz, or really just a person that can lead the business. You know,
a person with money,
or the money guy, right, or girl. But you know, look at the CXOs. You know, how many C-level people are in any organization, you really need one of those each category. And I honestly think this realm that we're in, all of us on this podcast, we are embracing this next generation of influencer marketing. You know, we are the next generation CMO, chief marketing officer, right? So we have to, but because we can know the full stack, we can see the full vision, we can, you know, communicate in most situations what we do, you know, whatever the product is. So personally, I think that's my, if I was thinking like Gabe is, and I totally get what you're saying, Gabe, that's our placement.
Yeah, it is. It is taking a wide swath of past experiences and applying those all into a much more focused message that's different than others. I mean, I think you can be a good marketer, a technical marketer, or chief marketing officer to a certain extent without having had official marketing training. You know, some people who work in marketing may say that's crazy talk, but some of the, you know, I think in technology, that's one area where you can start to make your mark or at least make a significant impact. I mean, you know, all the things you rattled off earlier, you know, about, you know, being a coder and all this, I'm none of those things.
I know. And that's why I asked.
And you know, and the thing is, though, I think that the interactions I've had with different technology CEOs have been pretty interesting. So I've talked to several, you know, startup CEOs over the course of the last 5 years or so, just in looking for advice and looking for mentorship and whatnot. And I see different calibers of people. You know, you see the people that are purely business driven, purely sales driven, and that's where their background comes from. And, you know, they've gotten themselves, they've acquired a nest egg of wealth that they're able to go out and start something, or they have such they're so well connected in the industry that they can go out and reach and bring the right people in to build that company from the start and not have to have the highly technical aspect. And I've seen the complete inverse where, I mean, you know, our own CEO at SolidFire, Dave Wright, is, you know, a technical wizard that I can't even comprehend the level of technical acumen that he has in the ability to distill that down and to craft a product and by sheer will, you know, make a company and go to market with it, not just once, but several times.
I want to get back to talking about Chris here.
And, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead and just cut out that whole last thing I just said. You know what? Sorry, Chris.
Poo-poo on your career.
Well, you asked.
Well, actually, what I was thinking is that it was going to be like a one word answer, like Emulex, but that's okay. Chris, has the company sent you the expense and travel policy paperwork yet?
Yeah, and it's so I'll say, I've worked at very large companies, very large consulting firms. It's definitely a change in the way that you conduct your business and the way that you get from place to place. And part of me is a little sad, but at the same time, I'm not all that married to having crazy status on these various airlines and stuff anyways. So it's fine with me.
Yeah. So we can expect to see tweets from you about airport delays, airline delays and such like that.
You know, I travel a lot as it is, and you pretty much never see those because that's just life. And I don't really see a point in complaining about stuff that you have no control over. So I don't think you'll see any of my complaints.
Yeah. Yeah,
unless it's 11:30 at night and Ava still hasn't brought your rental car up.
Guys, just drive once to California and then you'll stop complaining about every delayed flight you ever deal with.
Yeah, people seem to take it really personally that some airline bumped them or whatever, and you know, that's just I don't get the point of polluting your Twitter stream with bitching. So I don't plan to do any of that.
How much of Wall Networks is going to be part of what you do at Rubrik?
Yeah, that's a good question. And in fact, I'll kind of take that back a step. Going fully independent with Wall Network was kind of on the table mentally for me before I chose to work for someone else, as well as moving to a national level consulting firm instead of staying with kind of more U.S. and North America focused one. The reason I didn't want to do independent shop was there's a lot of jobs running your own kind of one person consulting firm that I had no interest in doing, sales and accounting being chief among them. And the national consulting firm sounded really neat, but it just felt like a little more of the same, just at larger scale. So as far as back to your question on Wall Network, I don't think a lot's going to change as far as what's on there. I have a pretty strict policy. I don't do any sponsored posts and I don't do any influence posts. I don't let people influence what goes on there necessarily. Mm-hmm. I love it when vendors reach out and say, hey, we got this product, check it out. And I'll check it out. And if you don't see a post, it's because I didn't like it. And if you do, it's because there's things I enjoyed about and I want to share. I imagine my time there will be drastically reduced. You know, I'm not going to be able to crank out all the videos and stuff that I used to do. But in a way, it's going to change quite a bit. The content that I put out has been very technical and kind of very focused on VMware stuff and NSX stuff. And I think it's going to be much more focused on DevOps and writing to APIs and dealing with working with the folks in your dev team and working with the folks that want to write to these APIs as an ops person. And that's been something I've been transitioning myself to over the past 6 or 8 months anyways. So I imagine you're still going to see content out there. It just won't be to the degree that it was before.
So my guess is that people will not only give you a pass, but they'll somewhat expect you to be able to put meat on the table around Rubrik's technologies and implementation details and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and I use a person that I've watched do that, and I feel like it's been successfully, is Frank Deneman. His blog certainly doesn't seem to be as prominent as it was when he was the co-author of the HA book and DRS book with Duncan, and they both worked at VMware, and he was kind of like the mouthpiece of VMware as far as he got that direct feed from engineering. But if you look at his content, it's been very loosely coupled to Pernix Data, which is where he works. It's more about the technical bits around how to do distributed architecture and where Flash should be. And I thought he's done a really good job at producing quality content that I'm interested in without just kind of blowing the horn for his company. So I'd like to sort of emulate what he's doing in a way.
He has done an outstanding job of that transition because it is tough, you know, because not just – and it's not one of those tough – things that, oh, you can only write about the technologies your employer are in. It's tough because you can't promote necessarily something that they don't work in or, of course, their competition, right? So there's a lot more rules that come into play. And I think, yeah, Frank's done an outstanding job with that transition.
You know, I struggle with that myself because I think some of my better writing at times has come from things I've written for a company that I work for, and I'm proud of it, and I want to showcase it on my own site, but then I don't want to be a total shill 24/7. So, you know, I usually put a shameless plug warning in front of any of those posts. Like, if you don't want to read something I wrote for a company I work for, just skip this post.
Yeah,
but I think it can be done. I mean, you can write about your own technology though in a way that's not combative. I think, you know, it's the thing is when you work for a company, or even if you're a consultant and you get involved with a project with somebody that's hired you, you get insights into it that can be difficult to get other ways, and those insights can be stimulating and they're exciting, right? And so I think it's good. I think it's fair to just let that stuff flow and let it come out.
You know what? To me, as a customer, that kind of stuff is invaluable. To be able to pick the brains or read the blog of somebody that's got a hook into engineering at a company that I'm interested in, maybe proof of concepting their technology or something, I take a load of value out of stuff like that. If you've got hooks into engineering, what the hell? Get that message out there. Because you know what? I mean, I gripe all the time whenever there's a new product comes out and all that's available about that product is like high-level marketing bump. I'm like, where's the detail? You've just announced a potentially a great new product, and I'm scouring the internet, and there's like nothing decent of any technical value that I can read about it. But then if, let's say, guys like yourselves who are evangelistas at these companies, you can go and share stuff. I'm all for that. I mean, Gabriel, that's a great idea. Yeah, put a, you know, warning, shameless plug coming up here. If people want to nick off and not bother reading it, fair play. But you know what? If you're providing value, do it.
I'd agree.
There you go. We've green-lighted you, Chris, as if that matters.
Well, if you look at the top five bloggers, you know, other than Frank, they're all at VMware. And I think they've all kind of had that moment where they switched over to VMware. They were at other companies or consulting companies, et cetera. And you know, Duncan and Cormick especially have done a great job at highlighting startups and people in their partner ecosystem, as well as telling you some of the things that it's almost surprising it goes on their blog first, because, you know, in a lot of cases, they're the first way that you can find out about how to do things that are technical with a VMware product. I almost wish VMware had better non-blogged documentation, because these guys do such a good job.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny because I think, you know, they are as the tip of the spear to say, more people will go and look at their blog than I think that if it was hosted on the VMware site itself.
Right.
Agreed.
But then there's the flip side of it. I mean, I've seen lots of people who have joined an organization, and the next thing you know, everything that they'd ever worked on in the past, it doesn't exist anymore, and the only thing that they want to talk
about. Oh, I hate that. Oh, that is Rickatron pet peeve, man. Don't go there.
I mean, it's your blog. You do whatever you want with it, but I can't think that you're going to stay highly trafficked if all you ever talk about is, you know, super product XYZ.
Well, it'd be one thing if it is documenting their learning endeavor. That is okay, because there's a market for that. If you're learning it, much less at an internal level, there's 10, 15, 100 times as many people on the outside that need to learn it as a user level. So there's a benefit there. But yeah, I hate that hat flip, I call it. You know, you flip the hat and everything looks that way.
So let's switch on to tech news then. Again, not a lot this week. I've only got three items here. So I thought we might have a quick chinwag about Gartner's new cloud storage magic quadrant that's only got two of the quadrants filled in. Go figure. Also, Radeon memory systems, according to the Register, are rumored to be coming out of stealth at the Flash Memory Summit. And I don't know if anybody picked up on this one, but Mark Zuckerberg... kind of outside of our wheelhouse here, actually, but he reckons that Facebook will one day work on telepathy rather than having to sit at a keyboard and type in status updates. That's pretty weird for me. But you know what? All this talk of us wanting to live in the future and stuff, you've got to be able to embrace stuff like that. But there you go. So that's our three news items of the week. Did everybody get to see the Gartner Magic Quadrant for Cloud Storage?
I have not, actually. It's
pretty easy. Seven parties.
Yeah. So seven parties for any listeners as well that haven't seen it. Out in the top right, so in the leaders quadrant, we've got Amazon Web Services trailblazing out there, followed closely by Microsoft and followed not so closely by Google. Then in the bottom left-hand corner, or the bottom left-hand quadrant, we've got AT&T, IBM, Rackspace and Verizon. Literally nobody in the visionaries or the challengers quadrants. Now, don't get me wrong, totally appreciate that people in the leaders are seen as being visionaries and they have the ability to execute and all of that, right? But it's literally like a straight line from bottom left corner to top right, and there's hardly anybody in the magic quadrant as well. There's a total of seven companies. Now, I kind of thought that was a bit weird, that, you know, normally when you look at these magic quadrants, you've got startups and small companies that are in the bottom right-hand corner, seen as visionaries. They've got great ideas. They're trying to disrupt the market. They're a lot more agile than the big established players, but they just don't have that ability to execute yet. But there's literally none of that. Everybody on there is, I would say, a major player. There's no startups. There's nobody that's trying to disrupt. I mean... Don't get me wrong, right? I'm sure Amazon Web Services, Microsoft and Google are innovating and are trying to disrupt, but it looks very weird. And I don't know if anybody else has a comment on this, but VM Tyler on Twitter said, yeah, well, that just says that it's totally a utility now, you know, the fact that it's just a straight line through there. Does anybody have any thoughts on this?
Well, the first thing to note is this is just cloud storage.
Storage, right? Right. Yes.
So if you go to the other one for infrastructure as a service, it's a different look, right? But when it comes to the storage, I mean, object storage is object storage. I really can't – cloud storage, you know, I guess I shouldn't say it's just object storage. But, you know, Amazon clearly has two different types, right? And so does Microsoft with because they have the compute – and level as well. But I don't know if there really should be that far of a distance between those two. I really don't know. I mean, granted, Amazon has the full package, which is probably part of the indicator. But this is a funny quadrant. We were talking earlier. I'm convinced it's a lightsaber. And your hand goes between Verizon and Rackspace, and the blade is at the A of Amazon.
That's very cool. Yeah, we'll have to put the picture in, and I'll maybe see if I can draw a lightsaber over it for in the podcast notes. But what it reminded me of was, and I don't know if this quite works, shoot me down here, but I think it was you last week or the previous week's episode, Mark, that said, when we were talking about NetApp, oh, and Chris, we must get your take on NetApp actually at some point, but you were talking about NetApp saying, you know, back in the day, there were no startups really that were hacking away at NetApp because it just couldn't be done. They were in the zone. They were innovating. They were, you know, onboarding customers like crazy. There was NetApp love and nobody was eating away at their market share. Totally different story these days. Okay. And I'm wondering, okay, to get into anything that's cloud these days, right? But I guess we're talking particularly cloud storage here, right? To get in, massive capital upfront costs, right? And a massive risk to your business, right? Because, you know, you've got to invest so much, and if it doesn't work, sayonara, okay? Will we get to the point, though, in the future where the likes of Google and Microsoft and Amazon Web Services kind of, I don't know, stop the innovation, get huger and uglier and politically awful organizations to work at, and then will we see startups come and start pecking away at them, or is this just like a totally different market because of the scale?
If you look at the companies that are involved in this market, this is a secondary revenue stream for them. It's not their primary business. And it's because they are the size that they are that they can offer something like this. I don't see anybody reaching into this marketplace that isn't an established player with a huge amount of capital and data center space already available.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. The scale is so large. And to Gabriel's point, the data center skills have to be so high. I don't see anybody else coming in here. You know, it's not like you're going to have somebody come up in a region and do it because, you know, they won't be able to compete price wise. And these guys go in every region, except maybe in China. There will probably be competition true. In China.
You can see and Huawei being on this list at some point in the future if they
want. Yeah, or other Chinese companies.
Didn't we talk about a subsidiary of Alibaba recently?
Yeah, Alibaba would be the one that would make sense.
Yeah. What you're not going to see is momandpopcloud.com come up. And you know what you're going to see is you're going to eventually see some of these leave the market. This is going to be down to a smaller race of a few. You know, I hate to say it can't go up. So it has to go down.
That would be those top three, do you think, then?
I think maybe. Oh, okay.
It's going to be hard for Rackspace. I think it's going to be very hard for Rackspace to hang.
IBM is the one that I don't like here.
Okay.
Really, I think Rackspace is probably the one that's going
to
cave.
Or I would say a Verizon and AT&T basically decide to exit the market altogether because
or they buy each other.
Their skill sets are more attuned to something else.
Only the niche.
They're probably loving it because they're on there because they bought other organizations like Terramark or whatnot that had those services in the past.
But that's where you're going to see the movement, that niche quadrant.
Yeah.
Right. You're going to see exits or consolidation. Honestly, Verizon, AT&T, which legally US would probably never let happen, but you know, maybe IBM focuses on something else. They do that, right? They divest lines of business.
Uh-huh.
You know, AT&T, Verizon might, one of them might not make it, tired of fighting with each other, much less the others. Rackspace is kind of a question. So I think if anything, you're going to see one or more in the long term leave that bottom left.
I'd be pretty sad if it was Rackspace, actually, because obviously they're OpenStack based. And although I've said things about OpenStack in the past where, you know, I don't think it's quite where everybody had hoped it would be at this point in time, I would really like to see it be a success and for there to be like a viable public cloud service out there based off of OpenStack. I think just the technologists inside of me would really want that to happen. I'd be pretty gutted if they went away.
I agree with you, Nigel. Another thing that's interesting about this is that with the exception of IBM, none of these are storage companies.
Oh, yeah?
Right. Traditional storage companies. They're all data center companies. And that's a very telling thing.
So that's an interesting point, right? Does that mean IBM has effectively zero hardware cost? I mean, a lot of these other ones are ultra commodity. Honestly, IBM might not be able to manufacture that. But is that an unfair advantage? I know Google has like the zero bandwidth thing, right? So bandwidth costing. So who has the dark horse advantage, right? Does IBM have a supply chain advantage?
I doubt it. I doubt they can compete, right? Amazon can build their cloud storage cheaper than IBM can build its own storage products and use in the cloud.
I believe that.
I'd agree with that, yeah.
Right. I mean, that was the idea kind of, you know, once upon a time way back, you know, with 3PAR and HP is that, you know, the HP cloud would use 3PAR storage. Really? You know, no way. too expensive.
Hey, HP are not on there, right?
They're not on here.
They are not. They are this, well, and that's because one of two reasons. They don't meet some documented criteria, or they've opted out knowing that they'd not do well.
Okay.
You know, so when you floated this by earlier, you know, prior to the show, you questioned whether or not Google actually belonged in that leader quadrant. And I don't think they do. I mean, you know, Gartner's trying to like figure out how to make this work. I would have put Google up in the upper left, and I would have used that quadrant up there that, you know, they can execute somehow. They can execute. But I don't think they've shown any vision of leadership in how to make cloud storage work. I mean, if you compare the storage services that you can get from Microsoft and Amazon, and I should list them separately, from Amazon first and then Microsoft, you know, Google's a far, far behind them in what you can do. They don't belong there.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Sorry. Sorry, Google. You're not there.
Okay, fair play. We're kind of running a little bit long, so I wanted to just ask you a quick question, something that I had a discussion with Gabriel and Rick earlier. So this Radian Memory Systems company, rumored, according to the Register, to be coming out of stealth at the Flash Memory Summit. Now, I looked at some of the people that are going to be at the Flash Memory Summit. Okay, we've got Oracle are going to be a keynote speech there. NetApp are two. Radian Memory Systems are... Okay, so they're not like an array vendor or anything. I mean, it's very difficult to find out anything about them because they've got about three lines about the company on their website. But storage software company, or a storage memory software company, I should say. Are we about to see the Flash Memory Summit become a bigger and a more important industry event?
So I've got a snarky view here. Gabe and I kind of agree, is that any event at the Santa Clara Convention Center is like, okay, I'm going to look over that, right? And I know Mark and Gabe both, you California guys, especially Mark North, California. Not that I'm knocking the area, but that anything there is just swarming with biz dev. And I just – it's not my thing. So all the vendors are all there. So they all just like the worst thing I'll ever do is a user event there, which oddly I'm doing two of them next week. But that's another story. But it's just – it's a mecca for biz dev. So I kind of ignore those. But, you know, the market, memory, flash, software, it's emerging. So maybe it is. Who knows?
Yeah, I'm just wondering, you know, if it's if it needs to get bigger – if it's the natural choice as a show for flash memory and memory storage based startups to be a part of, to come out of stealth, there's all the media hype around it. Don't get me wrong, it's not a big show yet. I get that. But, you know, Oracle are rocking up, NetApp are rocking up. Is it the kind of show that the likes of SolidFire and Tagile and people like that? And I'm asking you, Mark and Gabriel. No,
I don't see any value as a storage vendor even going to it unless, I mean, this is kind of one of those places where you go and you talk to the manufacturers of flash memory, not the consumers of flash memory for the most part. Though I think some organizations, you know, I think all the storage companies who buy and leverage flash in their systems will send engineers to this to go and find out what, you know, the state of where things are going, and whatnot, but this is not a place where you go and, you know, you do lead gen to sell your storage platform. And that's what those events, you know, like a VMworld or, you know, Cisco Live or those others are really built on.
I'll probably go this year, right? And it'll be an education tour for me, most part. And, you know, the thing is, this show probably won't, like, you know, to Gabe's point, probably won't have a lot of end users at it. But it'll be interesting to see what the rest of the industry is doing. I see this as like the disk drive shows of the past decades, right? Which tended to be smaller shows, right? Disk drive conferences, you know, not that big, not that interesting.
Yeah, that sounds terrible. Right? Oh, God. Disk
drive. Well, I think it's a similar thing, though, right? I mean,
right?
Yeah, VMware,
you're gonna walk in a room and there's
tap.
Gonna be a bunch of chips on tables. I'm like, hey now, check it out.
There is their tap for alliance partners. It's a similar deal, you know, people that are looking to interface with the vendor.
There's more color here. There are subsystems, and you know, there's all different ways of doing this. And interesting explanation. You know, there's server side. There's, you know, different kinds of software you can put in front of it for inline dedupe. You know, after, you know, post pro. You know, there's a bunch of stuff that goes around it that's probably more interesting than most discussions were around disk drives. But maybe not though. Back in the day, a disk drive was a miracle, right? The way these things worked. And there was a ton of interesting technology around them, and still it wasn't, you know, that compelling to everybody. So maybe, who knows how interesting it's going to be.
Was this back when Knight Rider was still on TV?
Yeah. Yes.
Yes, Michael. Well,
another classic show that I'm sure all techies watched. Hey, Mark, when you've been, you'll have to give us a like your opinion of the event, you know, what was going down there.
Okay. Yeah, I'll do that. I'll probably get ostracized from the industry for doing so. I might not be as cold as Rick, though. You know, Rick sounds really cold on it. Oof.
Yeah. So let's just wrap up with some quick biz news. Two items, right? I don't know who else saw this, but VMware agreed to pay out, I don't know, something like $500 million.
$75.5 million.
Oh, $500 million.
Yeah, and they have to share that cost with the partner, Carahsoft, in this particular case. And, you know, I had to discuss with a couple of people about this. I'm like, this is partly, you know, VMware, and then it's partly the partner, and how U.S. government purchases software, or how they fail to purchase software without getting a good deal.
Yeah, so let me just give a quick recap for any of the listeners that might not know. So VMware had a lawsuit brought against them by a former employee over they apparently, and I'm going to say that in a press release, VMware strenuously denies any wrongdoing here, but have agreed to make a payout so that it, you know, just doesn't get dragged on with one of their biggest customers. But the allegation is that they were effectively ripping off the US government by not giving them as good a discount as they should be, and have paid out, I guess, as you're saying there, Gabriel, a joint payout from the partner and VMware of $75 million, which, okay, fair enough. But what I thought was interesting was the guy that brought the suit against them, who apparently got fired from VMware for raising this question internally, saying, hey, should we really be doing this? Apparently he's going to get like somewhere between 11 and 18 million out of it himself. I'm like, I saw it.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa. New job as a whistleblower. Where can you apply as a whistleblower?
So I asked Gabriel if he's got any whistleblowing he can do from his days at Cisco, but nothing that he would at least tell me about.
Nope. I would be sued to death, but two.
Yeah.
There's really nothing.
No,
you know, I've never seen anything nefarious. I mean, I do remember, and it's funny, I was with, I don't know who I was talking to, but I was in Cisco Live, and we were talking about that there was a deal that went down in the state of like West Virginia where, you know, they were buying like these enterprise class, you know, data center grade routers for like, you know, four person library trailers in the middle of nowhere.
What?
And paying like $75,000 for a router that they put there to service two PCs. That was something that, you know, got a little bit of brouhaha a few years back. But, you know, I think those things happen. Those are, those are part of that infamous good old boy network and, you know, relationships that drive specific types of sales.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the federal business is always a little bit interesting, right?
It's a nightmare.
Yeah.
And if you look at it too, if you look at some of the vendors that play in that space, you know, they tend to be, you know, they have the special classification that the government looks for. They're like veteran, you know, combat wounded, minority veteran owned businesses. And they seem to be the ones that broker all these great, you know, huge deals and large purchasing contracts because they get preference based on that classification. I think that that's a bit unfair for anybody else who wants to compete in that marketplace. But, you know, the ability to navigate federal or state contracts is some kind of bizarre wizardry that, you know, I am flummoxed by. And so, you know, it takes a special set of talents in order to do those. And I think that's probably why they do make, you know, very good living, but also why there's very few of them that really specialize in it.
So just hire Liam Neeson. Good to go.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Taken four.
All right, well, guys, unless anybody has anything else, does anybody have anything else?
Well, you did touch on the one that was really crazy ass, which is Zuckerberg and telepathy. Yeah. Yeah, so what's going on there? I did not see the article. What's he talking about?
Yeah, so I only had a skim read of it. I wish I hadn't now. So apparently he was speaking at a conference recently, and he was basically saying that he believes in the future. And who am I to mock at it, you know? I mean, hell, technology has made just amazing advances over even just the last 10 years. But he was talking about being able to make updates to Facebook and stuff like that without having to type, just like, probably sounds a bit daft, but the power of thought. Yeah?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, so, like, have you ever had a telepathic moment?
No, I haven't, actually. You're going to tell me that you have. You weren't eating mushrooms at the time, were you?
No, but, I mean, there's sometimes you have these deja vu things, and sometimes you could just see things coming. But and it wasn't so much mushrooms as the other chemicals.
Yeah,
mushrooms, too. But I'm just wondering if you ever have, or, you know, Gabriel or Chris, if you've ever had anything that you thought was a telepathic kind of thing.
Not since I was 8.
Yeah.
It's been pretty dead since then, yeah.
Yeah. Once I got rid of my imaginary friend, my telepathy went away.
I don't want to laugh, actually, but I do half wonder, you know, all of these books and things that I read seem to talk about, and they're just books at the end of the day, right? Maybe they are, maybe they aren't, I don't know. But they seem to talk about the massive potential that is within us.
Yeah, I mean, we always use, isn't the rumor or isn't the thing, you know, the claim that we only use 10% of our brains? I'm like, well, gosh, kind of a waste to have the other 90% sitting around doing nothing.
I know, yeah. I mean, I would love to believe that that kind of stuff is at some point possible for us. I mean, I read a book recently, not a sci-fi book or anything, but it's called 10% Happier by a guy who used to be a news reporter that got into yoga and meditation, right? And I've always kind of thought to myself, you know what? I'd quite fancy learning to meditate properly and control and master my own mind and things like that. And I really wonder what the potential is. And you know what? Maybe, especially for me, the potential is probably very little. But for some people, I don't know. I wonder. And then, yeah, I'm waffling now, right? But all of these all these TV shows like Heroes and things like that from the past, I'm like, oh, I don't know. Evolution, all that kind of stuff. Maybe there's a next generation coming through that have got superpowers. I don't know.
Well, I don't see any animals with superpowers.
Come on, dogs have superpowers.
Turtles have been around for a long time. Alligators.
Anyone they can use Emacs successfully has superpowers.
Well, that's very true, yeah.
and cats might not have superpowers, but their urine does.
Oh, nice. Oh,
I don't want to know. Hell? I'm not drinking any of your beer from now on.
Cat urine ale.
No. We don't put that in the ale.
I know you put powdered sugar in there, so.
That, yes. Yeah. I should be drinking one of those today.
Mark, you definitely talked last week about wanting to can your beer in little cat food size cans and then feed it to your cats. You've not got something going on there where they...
cat cakes.
That was a fantasy. That was science fiction right there.
Speaking of science fiction audiobooks, I happened across one the other day called Hard Luck Hank. I would recommend, I think it's a rather cheap, it's like a $7 download, but it was actually somewhat entertaining.
So you say Hard Luck Hank.
Hard Luck Hank, yeah. It's pretty funny. It's tongue in cheek. It's, you know, it was fun.
All right, I'll check it out then.
I want to make one more comment about science fiction.
Uh-huh.
Last week, Ornette Coleman died, who was a real trendsetter in the jazz world. He really ushered in free jazz in the 60s. And most people don't like that stuff very much, so I won't go off on it a long time, but he really was one of the big figures of free jazz, along with John Coltrane and Cecil Taylor. And you could possibly throw Eric Dolphy in there, too, back in the early 60s. In the early 70s, he released an album named Science Fiction. And I think you can still get it downloaded, probably available on iTunes and whatnot. Ornette Coleman, Science Fiction. And it'll probably expand your head. And it'll be wild, free-flowing stuff that you may or may not be comfortable listening to. But it was I love it. I thought it was a terrific album. It's hard to talk about Ornette Coleman's music, but I just thought I'd point people there since we had a little bit of a science fiction theme today.
Magic, that's great. And I think on that note, then let's wind out for this week. Thanks everybody for being on the show. Chris, thanks for being our guest. Really appreciate your time, and huge luck at Rubric, and good luck with Datanauts as well. Looking forward to more episodes.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.